Welcome to the 158th episode of the Nostravaganza podcast, as well as the annual meeting of our Battle Beyond the Stars fan club. I'm Tom.
I'm Brian.
I'm Chris.
And I'm Cam.
And in case that intro didn't clue you in, this week Chris will be leading a discussion of sci-fi and other fan clubs and their past, present, and future state, as compared to, say, conventions, or as they relate to conventions, I think. Chris, is that fair to say?
Well, you know, some of it's actually quite tied together. And there's a history between all of that.
We look forward to learning more. But first, we'll have our club's annual board meeting, wherein we report the latest happenings in our lives with our weekly, geekly update. I don't know why we're giving weekly updates at an annual meeting, but oh well, I tried. Chris, why don't you do the honors first?
Certainly, okay. By Robert Rules of Order, I assume I have the floor. Well, for me, for Geekly Weekly, I couldn't have gotten much geekier because the family and I, we went to the Harry Potter at Universal.
Nice.
And thank you. And just like you said, Tom, that was the vibe I got, was that the side that's on Islands of Adventure is kind of the Disneyland, the first draft, so to speak. And then everything that was on the other side at just Universal Studios was definitely the Disney World. Okay, now we know what we're doing. Now we know how to get into this. And they just, you know, pulled out all the stops. It was really great. I think I might have to do a tips and tricks and give an update to that on how to be at a theme park. Because Universal, I mean, you could still probably do both parks in one day, but it's going to be rough on you this time. Used to be you could pull that off and you'd still have some energy at the end of the day. Today, with the new stuff, it's going to be a bit harder to do. The big one, of course, I guess I'm getting older, I don't know, is just trying to stay out of that heat. And trying to find a place to put your butt down, because either you can be in the air conditioning or you can be out in the street. But if you're in the air conditioning, it's all stores. There's no place to really sit down. And then, of course, related to how I've said before, I want to be that smart rat in the maze that notices how, you know, the experimenters are manipulating the test subjects. I noticed that there is a sort of secret architecture to Harry Potter. I'm not talking about the faux secret passages, but for those who've been there, you'll know that near Gringotts, there's this row of stairs that go to nowhere, and they're fenced off. And you might notice that in the whimsical sort of fashion of how they do Diagon Alley, a lot of the windowsills have extra wide ledges to them. And it clicked to me after a while that those are basically secret benches. They're hidden benches where you can just plop your butt on it and take a break off your feet. If you know the right one to pick, right by Nocturne Alley, you can find a spot to put your butt in the AC from the, you know, hidden, quote-unquote, hidden air-conditioned Nocturne Alley. It will just keep pushing on your back, and it feels wonderful.
Nice.
So, but yeah, that's one of the things I'd like about doing Universal and Disney, is watching how they do things and manipulate people. I also got a little bit of a sneak peek at the construction they're doing for the King Kong set.
Oh, and?
And, well, I mean, you can see, I mean, I looked at it and before I knew what it was and hit the Wi-Fi to figure it out, I thought they were going to do something like He-Man the way it looked. Because they've got this huge sort of mountain-looking castle thing that, you know, has skulls prominently on it. By the way, just to let you know, it's going to be one of their biggest attraction ever. And it's going to also have the biggest vehicle for an attraction ever. It's going to do 72 people at a time.
Whoa. Is this going to be like a on Skull Island attraction, I guess? Or
yeah, it's going to be like you're an Animal Kingdom safari sort of thing, but you're actually on Skull Island.
Oh, that sounds pretty cool, actually.
So, I mean, it looks like it's a big-ass Jeep, but I think there's a track underneath to make sure you kind of just go where the rails are supposed to go. And there's indoor and outdoor aspects to it as well. Most of this I found out online as compared to, you know, because when you go there, they did a kind of a cool fence that was basically a repeating motif of kind of caves or cliffs with lots of skulls on them. So, and of course, now in our, you know, heightened awareness of reality we have, it's going to be interesting to see how they do Skull Island without really crossing the new lines that we've got now for respect and cultural awareness.
Yeah, hopefully not a lot of insulting stereotypes of dark-complected, quote-unquote, natives.
Yeah, good luck with that, right? Yeah, yes, exactly. Yeah. That. No, I'm not hinting at that. I'm exactly saying that.
Yeah, yeah.
My guess would be if they were going to do something like that, there's going to be some poor actors that are going to be head-to-toe in, like, white pasty makeup to make them look like they're rolling around in ash or something.
Sure, sure.
So, and then my other geeky bit is I caught up with my trade paperbacks on All-Star Western, which is a new 52 comic. And I'm enjoying it because it is a rarity. Not only is it good, it is a Western comic. Later on in the series, they go into more supernatural sort of things and even kind of touch on the spandex superhero thing. But for the majority of its run, it's just been straight up Western with a slight supernatural flair, weird West sort of thing. And to have that as a comic that's still popular and has not been canceled after a year, you gotta know that's good, right?
Yep.
Kind of like Downton Abbey. Downton Abbey has to be good if people are tuning into PBS to watch a show. It's sort of on that same level.
Good point. Yes, yes.
Exactly.
I'm not exactly certain that what's popular is good.
That's a very valid point, but I'm saying it's a good seller. I mean, you know, I hear where you're coming from, but I mean, just that it's a good seller and it's out there, and I'm reading it, and I think it's good on its own merits, whether or not it's popular. And I definitely don't think it's the most popular of the 52, but it definitely has not been canceled yet. Crossing fingers. And just for those who are out there, their big focus is on the character Jonah Hex. Which had an abominable, well, I guess it could be highly cheesy, take your pick, movie back in the day.
Terrible.
With Josh Brolin. Josh Brolin being in that movie was great. And then once they said they threw Megan Fox in as the prostitute with the heart of gold, I was like, oh, there we go.
It's killed it.
Yeah, it's dead. It's dead to me. They even wasted John Malkovich as a villain. How can you do that?
Yeah, they screwed it up, man. It's not like comics-based movies haven't gone off the rails in the past.
No, but in this, back then, I guess they still had a little room for that as an excuse. Because what? How old is that movie now? I don't know off the top of my head.
No idea. Never saw
it. I think it was in the early days of Iron Man, but don't quote me. But yeah, and especially nowadays, there's like little to no error for that for a variety of reasons and expectations. So that is it for me on the Geekly Weekly. I now will release the floor, bequeath the floor, pass the baton, who knows, to the next person in line.
Yield your time.
Yes. Yield the remainder of the balance of your time to Speaker Brian, who will now take the floor. What have you been up to, sir?
I hate to ever talk about myself, but it's, you know, birthday week, so I spent a lot of time on myself. A lot of my friends are into the kind of, like, I don't know what the hell you do, so here's money. And I had to decide exactly how to spend that on good old Amazon. So I spent a lot of time looking at better than I have airbrushes. And I'm pretty excited. I found a pretty sweet deal on a scratch and dent Badger Soder, which is pretty top of the line. I'm kind of excited.
Cool. Yeah, I was pretty impressed with the quality of the coat that put down. You showed me some models that you had airbrushed. And if you're upgrading from what you have now, I'm sure that's going to be even more impressive.
It's much finer detail. So I should have that consistency everywhere instead of just big spots.
Cool.
Thrilled about that. And speaking of birthday gifts, thank you, Tom. I have gotten back on Final Fantasy XIV, which is apparently no longer called a Realm Reborn now that Heavensward is out.
Oh, really?
A Realm Reborn was the original. Heavensward is the expansion. So together, it's just Final Fantasy XIV.
Okay, all right, I'll take it. That's fine.
So Final Fantasy 14, I got that for the PlayStation 4. So I'm very excited about that. Fired it up and just happened to be standing next to someone who was giving out a quest. Picked it up. I guess it was a new thing for either in preparation of the expansion or maybe just because, you know, it was a recent patch that I missed or something. And they directed me to the newly opened Golden Saucer.
Ah, and?
I was very excited about that until I got there. And the first thing they wanted me to do was play Triple Triad. The worst thing in any Final Fantasy ever. I hate that game so much. And it's like a huge part. Like I was walking down the street and like people run up, play Triple Triad, play Triple Triad.
No thanks. No.
Oh, sorry.
Triple Triad worse than Tetramaster or what?
I never played Tetramaster. Triple Triad, I tried to play because you needed to do things in the game, and I was like, oh, I gotta finish it. It's a Final Fantasy. And
sorry, that's a turnoff. I was happy to see that Golden Saucer was on like the places to do stuff list because, well, I'll get to my update, but yeah, that's unfortunate.
I am heartbroken. But I would like to say that I still have that completionist, like, defect, so I play it anyway.
That's the kind of commitment we need, so excellent. I'm sure Cam will concur.
Yeah, for sure. I mean,
he has no idea what we're talking about.
No, I do. Yeah. I do. I just was just thinking about that. I still need to get onto it, and I haven't yet.
Well, hop on. Once Brian's the anchor. He will play through the worst of it, so.
The Bahamut server? That's what
yeah,
we're
I think so. All right. I think that's confirm that.
I thought it was Exodus. Aren't we on Exodus?
Yeah, Bahamut was 11, wasn't it?
Yeah, we're on Exodus.
I think Tom's right. We're on Exodus.
Okay.
So we'll see you on Exodus.
I'll be there.
Yay. Anything else, Brian?
That's enough for this week.
All right, Cam, we know next week's going to be all about Final Fantasy 14, but what else you got? Oh, by the way, the floor is yours.
For sure. I gladly accept the conch. And I will regale you with my tales of the week and weekend. I spent most of it in Central Florida, back at Disney, with my trusty and trite companion. We had a great time. She and I went to Magic Kingdom, and we went to Animal Kingdom. Two of the four. They're all my favorite, but Magic Kingdom is always my favorite, of course.
They're my top five.
Yeah, that was a great time. Let's see, I spent some time in Ocala, and I visited the gaming and comic haunts there. I went to a place called Vibranium Comics, which is right next to the Cardboard Horde. Vibranium Comics being a comic store, and then the Cardboard Horde being a game store / gaming depot. The two people that ran both of those places were really great. Hung out there for a little bit, checked out what they had. Then I headed over to this place called the Gamer's Edge, which was really cool. They specialize mainly in video games. And that was cool. I actually picked up an old PS3 game that I wanted to play. And, then I went to a brand new place that, just opened up, and it wasn't even on the internet. I just was sort of driving down the main thoroughfare and I saw a big sign. It's called Geek Out, geek being, G33K. And they had a ton of anime. They had a ton of board games. They had a bunch of, you know, Magic and Pokemon single type trading going on. They had a little tiny gaming room with a bunch of demo games. That place was pretty cool. The owner was really nice, and actually originally from down here in South Florida, and was familiar with the Adventure Game Store and the Dragon's Lair. So I spent some time talking to him and sampling his wares and checking out his store. So I suggest that anyone in or near the Ocala area, if your travels happen to take you that way, step into all of those places and support them.
Speaker Cam? Speaker Cam?
Yes.
My question is why is Ocala the center of geek nirvana over there? That's ridiculous.
I guess maybe because there's nothing else to do except drink and shag cows. I don't know. There wasn't really much to do. That's why I found myself driving around and looking for gaming stores. But there were a lot, so I guess that's good for Ocala.
Ocala, for our listeners not familiar with the geography of Florida, is what, north central Florida, I guess?
Yeah, it's about an hour north of Orlando, which is, you know, smack dab in the middle of the state.
Yeah, somewhat rural, I think it's fair to say.
Yeah,
it is, right. But it's also known for its thoroughbreds, right?
Yeah, it is very much a horse breeding town, and it is very much a aviation town as well. It's notable for its many surrounding suburbs that have private landing airstrips for people that, like John Travolta, who live there and can land their planes at their house, basically.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Do you wish to amend your cow shagging to reflect the equestrian nature of the community?
Well, I don't know. I've heard some pretty funny stories about John Travolta, allegedly.
Well, I was just thinking horses might be a more likely candidate than cows. But...
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, the horses, they are, you know, they breed for show and for money. That, you know.
Oh, I see. The cows are
for the cows for pleasure.
Yeah, exactly.
That's awful.
So that sheds a little bit of a light. It seems like your typical citizen of Ocala may have more disposable income than your usual out-of-the-way rural area then.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd say that.
Does cow shagging pay
well? Yeah, I don't know if I'd say that, but there, I guess, you know, like anywhere else, I'm sure there's an upper crust and a lower crust. And by the way, there was the purpose of my visit to Ocala had nothing to do with shagging of any animals. It was just an unexpected bonus. So the other highlight of my weekend was that I got in a new Kickstarter, Agents of Smersh. It's the second edition. It's a sort of storytelling role-playing game. That Kickstarter came in. Also, speaking of PlayStation 4, when we were talking about Final Fantasy, I bought this really amazing Joker skin for my PS4, which I am going to apply probably tomorrow. I got it day before yesterday. I just haven't had time to put it on, but it's going to look really killer, I think, when it's on. So I'm excited about that. And let's see. I think that's about it. A pretty geeky week and weekend. Great Memorial Day, spending time with friends and family. My best friend Mauricio had a daughter on Monday, which is awesome. So congrats to him. And you know, I think that's about it.
All right, that sounds like a pretty full update. Congratulations to your friend, and congratulations on your unexpected bonus journey to Ocala, which I think everybody will agree is an enviable experience.
Absolutely.
I guess that brings it around to me, and things have been pretty cool in my life, I guess. Played some more Dragon's Dogma, enjoying that game. There's a lot of game there, which is a great thing, except that I'm trying to play through the backlog of last-gen games that I have, not linger among them. So that's been going on. I've been having a good time with that game. It's really grown on me a lot. Bought Brian's old PCFX, which was the ill-fated successor to the PC Engine.
Ill-fated PC Engine.
Yes, the PC Engine, which is also... which was run in the U.S. as the TurboGrafx-16. So it's been an interesting ride because, of course, I set about looking for software for it, and it turns out you can get burns for a lot, which I don't normally advocate. But in one case, I actually found a modified game where they had translated it into English. So that's fascinating. Anyway, I'm enjoying tinkering around with that old piece of technology. That is the PCFX. Very niche. In addition, I saw Tomorrowland, wore my little Tomorrowland pin that I got at Epcot when I submitted a sales lead for a Chevy Volt. I have since received an email from a nearby Chevy dealer wanting to sell me a Chevy Volt, coincidentally. I enjoyed it. It seems to have gotten mixed reviews, but I thought it was a great movie myself. Of course, I was kind of primed to like it because of the kind of concept behind it. And I got my Final Fantasy 14 all patched up, played it briefly on the PS4. I need to map all my macros and stuff, but looks really good on there, and the animation's better. Definitely better than it was on the PS3. It played smoothly on the PS3, but a lot, you know, there was a sacrifice of a lot of detail and animation. So PS4 seems to play as well as a decently equipped computer. So looking forward to playing some of that on the Exodus server. Do join us, listeners. And I think that's pretty much it for me. Just those things that I said. And with my update out of the way, I think it's time now for some key points from this month's Nerdtravaganza Club newsletter.
Is this new and old business? Is that what we're calling
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah.
The new extravaganza?
Yeah, yeah. So we now move on to old business, I guess, or relatively new business in the form of news. Chris, why don't you hit us with some news bullets?
Sure, sure. I'm going to start off with the sad one first. A respected writer, Tenneth Lee, who received Lifetime Achievement Awards from World Fantasy as well as the World Horror Conventions, passed away this weekend. She wrote over 90 books or something like that. She was definitely the master of being the paperback writer. Actually, she even had dyslexia when she was a kid, which evidently didn't slow her down. But towards the end of her career, she was getting really frustrated that it seemed like publishers weren't picking her up. So anyone who wants to say there is some sort of secret conspiracy to, of female publishers trying to keep certain people off the shelf, she would definitely disagree with you there. And there has been talk about that, in addition to the whole sad puppy, rabid puppy thing, I'm not going to get into. What else we got? John Scalzi, the guy who did Old Man's War, has signed a $3.4 million deal for 13 books in 10 years.
Oof.
Including sequels to his Old Man War universe, some young adult novels, because what fantasy science fiction author is not having to do young adult novels these days? And I'm trying to think if there's anything else other than woohoo for him. I'm actually more impressed with the 10-year commitment as compared to the actual millions.
So is that $340,000 per book? Are they paying him up front, or is he like on a...
I'm sure they're not paying them all up front. I mean, generally how these deals work is, if you were doing a regular advance, you'd get half of it upon the publisher receiving your manuscript and the other half when it goes on the shelf. But still, send in one manuscript, that's still a good chunk of change when you divide it by 13, no matter what it is, when it's 3.4 million, right?
Oh, yeah. You said 13 books?
13 books. So basically, you multiply that by 2.
I gotcha.
Yeah, you multiply that by 2 because it's half and half. And still, divided by, 26.
But I really would love to see that contract. I wonder if it's like an NFL contract. Yeah, you're going to make $50 million, but we can cut you at any time. So even though you've only made $5 million out of that $50 million contract, you can get cut. I wonder if they can drop him if his second book is a flop.
I wonder too, but I think the impression I'm getting is they have a lot of faith in him because he's been a pretty good seller for years and years and years. Mm-hmm. But like I said, for me, unless he has that clause that they can drop him at any time, for me, the 10 years is more impressive because it shows a level of commitment to him. They're basically saying, we are going to be your employer, your bread and butter for the next 10 years. Because you used to do that in publishing. From the 50s to the 80s, it was like that for paperback writers. You would do a story, it would sell, and then they would just start stair-stepping your advance to the point they're like, okay, we know you're a regular seller. And then they basically made the commitment that they were going to keep you gainfully employed, in essence, with your advance. And that has changed a lot in the past, 20 years. Now, you're either a tax write-off or you're a guaranteed seller anyway, so they're just going to give you some money up front, but there's no actual commitment to backing how long they're going to be with you, like you said, with your clause. And then just as a little bit of trivia, the Sci-Fi Channel is coming out with a TV series called The Expanse, which is based on the Leviathan Awakes series. Actually, it's called The Expanse, this series, but the first book is called Leviathan Awakes, which is an award winner. And actually, it was written by two guys, one of them who happens to be the personal assistant to George R. R. Martin, but also has been an entrepreneur in his past. And they, believe it or not, that whole thing started 10, 15 years ago as a play-by-post role-playing game.
Hmm.
He started off with the concept that he was going to try to pitch it as an MMORPG. When that fell through, he decided to kind of keep it around as his personal little role-playing game world to play around with. And then eventually he bumped into his writing partner. His writing partner was like, holy shit, you have a full-on novel in here if you just want to actually do a plot line. And they worked on it together, and the rest is history. And now it's going to be on Sci-Fi later this year.
Very cool. And that name again?
That's The Expanse.
The Expanse.
When you see the trailer, you'll be like, you'll be like, okay, this is either going to be awesome or really bad. It just has that vibe to it.
Sounds
but
awesome.
One of the characters I'm looking forward to seeing, the actor's being played by the Breaking Bad hitman. I can't remember his name off the top of my head. The guy who was also the cranky teacher in the past couple of seasons of Community. What's his name?
You got me, man.
We failed.
the hitman. Wait, hold on. I know you're talking about the old guy. Armin Trout or whatever.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's it. Oh, and one more bit of news. It's good news for all of us here at the podcast. It is now official. Women love the dad bod.
The dad bod.
So the dad body. Yes. If you look like you got, if you got a little beer gut, but you look like you work out on the side as well a little bit, that's it. Women find that hot now. You are now a sex object.
Good to know, because that's pretty much what all my hard work has gotten me so far on my weight loss and fitness journey. Maybe I can stop short of the goal. I've arrived.
I'm not joking. That's the latest thing, is the dad bod.
Is this anecdotal evidence? Where are you?
No. There's a couple articles. You guys will see the links when I send them in for our podcast. But no, it's all over. It's the new hot thing to be. Maybe this is part of, like, you know, now we have plus size models, so now guys don't have to be, you know, looking like gym rats at the same time. I don't know.
Good to know that the bar is being lowered year by year.
I can't wait till women love the Zoidberg pod. That'll be the highly desirable.
Just bear in mind, too, that what's good for the gander is good for the goose or gander, whichever direction that should go, because if that's going to be acceptable, then the bus driver, the lady bus driver bod, no that doesn't work. I was trying to come up with like a...
I get what you're getting at, and that's why I love being a male, is just the beauty of double standards.
ouch.
Sorry, ladies.
No, I totally reject that, Cam.
You're such a feminist.
I'm a hardcore feminist. So yeah. Anyway, okay. So dad bod. Anything else?
Oh, that's it. I figured that's all pretty out there and wacky enough as it is.
Yeah. It was a full batch of news, which brings it around to you, Brian. You got some news for the board?
I do. I'm terribly interested in how comic book companies are dealing with their new success. And while DC certainly seems to be doing well on the WB, they apparently don't like comics anymore. They're just doing everything they can to drive people away. They have announced that they are planning on having half-page ads on the same page as their comics.
Oh, what?
They apparently that was a thing in like 1930, so why not do it today?
That's terrible. So I'm going to be like in the middle of a page and I'm going to see an ad for like World of Warcraft or something?
Yeah, probably Under Armour.
Speaking of dad bod, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, say, I don't know how many comic book readers will be putting on Under Armour, but
I think it's the whole point of the Under Armour is to shape you into something more pleasing.
I get you. Like male Spanx.
Yeah, basically. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
As a MMO player, ping is terribly important to me, and I'm always trying to get the best connection I can. Google Fiber may not be the way to go, though. Apparently, they've started just sending notices to their users who torrent anything. Hey, buddy, notice you torrent that. That'll be $20.
What? What? Google Fiber?
Google Fiber has been notified by a copyright owner or its authorized representative that your Google Fiber service has allegedly been used to access or download infringing copyrighted material. The notice that we received identifying the copyrighted material can be found attached to this letter.
Oh dear, that sucks.
So that's interesting.
I'll say this in Google Fiber's defense, at my little like shared living area up in Seattle, I won't get into the details, we got a letter like that because some fool was basically torrenting, and I think it was Comcast sent us a letter similar to that. But bottom line is, don't use your connection.
I know that we've talked about this before, but this is just like proof positive that Google knows every single thing you browse or download. I mean, they're clearly monitoring every packet you send.
So they were able to corroborate the claim by this copyright holder, basically based on looking at what you downloaded.
Yep.
Oof, that's scary.
And lastly, speaking of Final Fantasy, I really never knew this existed. Final Fantasy VI is one of my favorite games. Not even in the series, just period. I love that game. There's an official made by Square sequel called Final Fantasy VI: The After Years.
I had no idea about that until you like mentioned that the other day, Brian.
That kind of bothers me because I really hate Final Fantasy VI 2.
yeah, sure.
But, I mean, like I said, I'll probably still play it.
They've done it with worse, though, let's be honest. Is that new, or what's the deal?
New to me.
Yeah.
Release date, May 11th, 2015.
Okay, I can get behind that. I hope it doesn't suck, because Final Fantasy VI is like one of my favorite games ever. Cool. All right, so Final Fantasy VI 2. Anything
Final
else?
Final Fantasy VI: The After Years.
Yes, The After Years. Yes.
Available on Steam, $16.
All right, I'm in on it. I'm getting it right now. I'm hopping onto Steam and making that happen.
And that's it.
Okay, Cam, over to you for the final bit of old business / news, whatever we're calling it.
I've got a lot of just movie news, I guess. I forgot to mention in my weekly geekly I definitely saw Pitch Perfect 2 this weekend, so that was exciting for all you Pitch Perfect fans out there, which I'm sure I am one of many. But it seems like just the news is just full of reboots coming out. Usually it is, but just for whatever reason, this week there's a ton that have been announced. Point Break, you guys remember that great movie with Keanu?
Getting
a reboot. League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, terrible movie that came out about 10, 15 years ago, is getting a reboot. Independence Day 2. I know one of our collectively favorite movies, Independence Day 1.
Yeah, oh man, that was just great. That was phenomenal, even.
Now they're making I don't know if it's going to be a reboot. I think it's actually going to be a sequel. So that's exciting. Robert Rodriguez, you guys know him with like Machete and all those movies.
Yeah, heard of him.
He's making a Johnny Quest feature film. Remember Johnny Quest, the old cartoon with Haji, the racially insensitive Indian sidekick?
Yes, I do remember Haji. And I need to correct you. Haji was a catch-all for anybody of a somewhat dark complexion hailing from the Middle East, Asia Minor, the Indian subcontinent.
Yes.
But and, I already have my Johnny Quest remake. It's called The Venture Brothers.
Yeah. Fair point.
This is going to be a feature film, but one that I'm actually really excited about is well, there's two actually. One is, do you guys remember? I'm a huge fan of Tim Robbins. I'm sorry, Tim Curry, the you know, Tim Curry, the British actor.
Little guy. Isn't a fan of Tim Curry.
He's amazing. The guy is amazing. And my favorite role by far of his was the TV miniseries Stephen King. Stephen King's It.
Oh yeah, Pennywise.
Yeah.
When he was Pennywise, you remember that?
Yeah, that was phenomenal.
He was freaking awesome in that. Apparently, they are doing a feature film based on Stephen King's It, a two-film adaptation of the book. But it's already run into some trouble. They had tapped a guy named Cary Fukunaga to helm the movie. And he is known mainly for the HBO crime series True Detective, which was a smash hit last year. I don't know if any of you guys watched it, but it was amazing with Matthew McConaughey and Woody Harrelson. It was great. So they had tapped him to direct that the two film adaptation of Stephen King's It, but apparently he has been either kicked off or has left the project. So now they're trying to find someone else. So that is, I'll be interested to see who they snag to do that, because I'm really, really excited about that movie, and I hope they get someone good that does it well. One of my favorite types of documentaries that's really come into vogue lately is the like failed project or failed movie documentary. You guys know what I'm talking about?
Yes. Oh, yeah, like for Boondock Saints and for Jodorowsky's Dune.
Jodorowsky's Dune, The Death of Superman Lives, that kind of thing. It's pretty cool to see like the behind-the-scenes reasons as to why these films didn't get made or why these projects didn't go forward. Well, director George Miller, who directed the original Mad Max trilogy and the smash hit that just came out recently, Mad Max Fury Road,
which was awesome.
Yeah. I still haven't seen it. I'm definitely going to check that out, but, I guess they're making a documentary about his failed Justice League movie that was supposed to be made back in like 2007. It was supposed to be called Justice League Mortal. And I guess they started doing it. It was slated to have like a $200 to $300 million budget. It was supposed to be like a huge, I think they tapped it as a contender with Iron Man or Avengers or whatever, and it just didn't get made. And so there is a documentary coming out to discuss why that movie never got made, and I'm looking forward to that for sure. In my Geekly, I talked about Central Florida and all the theme park goodness that's up there. One of my other favorite attractions up there is Legoland. Have any of you guys ever been there?
I don't have a kid to bring with me, so I cannot go.
Legoland is great. It's going to be even greater now because soon to be opening up is a Legoland hotel right across the street. It is basically a whole huge hotel themed in Legos, basically. And there is a huge dragon right when you walk in that breathes fire and smoke, built completely out of Legos. Everything is Lego themed. I'm excited to check that out. So that should be cool. And finally, I love when hackers do this and, you know, expose things that we mere mortals wouldn't otherwise know about. You know, I've heard, you know, I don't have any direct experience with this, but I've heard that if you were to visit porn websites, that there are certain ads and stuff that pop up when you do visit those sites.
Huh.
One of the main ones being a site called Adult Friend Finder, which I would never come across in my daily know, web surfing.
Yeah, I don't know what that's all about. Okay.
Yeah, but apparently this article says that it's about people who want to hook up with other adults and have consensual sex. I don't know, you know, that's a pretty novel idea.
They want to get married and stuff, or what's that?
I don't know. I think it might be
a bit of trivia, by the way. That was actually started as a way to find your golfing buddies. and kind of actually morphed into what it is today, from what I
very heard. Very cool.
Okay, all right.
Well, a hacker by the name of ROR bracket RG and close bracket hacked the site Adult Friend Finder.
Oh,
and I guess probably for selfish purposes, because I guess he stole a bunch of information about the users of that site, like their sexual orientation, their sexual preferences, their different kinks and all that stuff, and will probably use it to blackmail people.
Yeah, sure.
But he also had, an altruistic streak, or he or she, and reported onto the web that Adult Friend Finder's male-to-female ratio is 16 to 1.
That's a shock. What? Get out of town. No way.
Way better than I expected.
Yeah, right. So, well, I guess apparently Adult Friend Finder allegedly is boasting a much more balanced ratio, probably to get people to, you know, join and put their, you know, credit cards up. But it looks like there's about, in the United Kingdom, there's about 1,600 women and about 27,000 males. So if you're, and you know, that's
some
not even counting
girls.
You know, that's not even counting catfishers and fake, you know, bot profiles and stuff like that. So if you're in the UK, I don't know that, you know, and you're a male, I don't know that Adult Friend Finder is your best bet to find a friend to keep you warm in the night, unless you're looking for another man, which is, you know, totally fine if that's what you're into. But just a heads up on that. And with that, I will yield my remaining time and end my news segment.
All right. Wow, depressing as it is to hear that a site devoted to no strings attached hookups is heavily frequented by men. I guess we can pick up the pieces and move on. And discuss something else heavily frequented by men.
Awesome segue.
Thank you. Specifically, sci-fi and I guess really fandom club meetings, let's say. Chris, this was sort of your baby, and so we're going to let you frame the discussion and kind of lead it where you want. But if I understand, it's kind of one of the central thrusts of the discussion as you want to have it, there has been a decline in clubs devoted to fandom, even as there has been an increase in attendance at conventions. Is that more or less it, or at least the broad strokes?
Yeah, it is. I actually attended an old sci-fi club I am attached to, and it's actually grown a little bit, but for the longest time, for the past 10 years, it's pretty much been six people. Or seven people, three couples and I, and that's it. And this is a group that in the 90s used to hold what was called Tropicon and was big and had, you know, huge science fiction fantasy authors and stars and up-and-coming comic book writers who are now, you couldn't even rent if you wanted to. Basically, anyone who's who now, probably in the 90s would have been at this convention before they've taken off to the point where they are now. And I say that with little to no exaggeration. But most of my buddies, they went to Oasis, which is a nonprofit convention in Orlando. And they went to one of their kind of board meetings, which we have kind of lovingly spoofed here tonight. And they said, yeah, their membership, not the con attendance, the membership of people in the club, which also kind of correlates to the number of volunteers who help run the convention, is down. And talking to their fellow clubs across the nation, it's kind of the same. But sci-fi club membership attendance is just kind of going down and down and down. And, you know, and it's a little sad because back in the day, that's how this all started, was by, you know, people coming together because they couldn't do their geekiness out in public or have the technology to do it. So they met once a month to hang out and talk and do their little, well, the perfect example is we had the Doctor Who guys back in the day. That's the only way you could even get it to look at the sort of fan stuff that people put together.
Was check out their tapes.
The clubs. Yeah. Through the tapes that were mailed to clubs and to conventions, for people to check out. And those clubs became nonprofit conventions run by volunteers, which is how, like, recently we had a, didn't we have a news item where the for-profit conventions may soon run into labor issues because they should be paying their volunteer force?
I believe we did discuss that, yes.
Yep, yep. And that is a tradition that came from the nonprofit conventions. So, you know, there's still aspects of sci-fi clubs that still are on the edges of what we do, and we don't even know why we've done them for ages like that. So, you know, I would like to say, and I think that, you know, that the 90s is probably their heyday. So I wanted to kind of chat and discuss and get into the brain trust with my fellow board members here at Nerdstravaganza 501c3. Not really. Before our attorney buddy here, Gix, has to jump in and go, wait, wait. And you know, talk about why we think it happened and what clubs can do and where we think they're going to go next. Because I think for me, you know, we've mentioned a little bit about the technology, but, you know, there's just something about hanging around with your buds and talk about gaming. I mean, this podcast is a beautiful example of me getting to enjoy that kind of club-like atmosphere every week. And I'm going to stop rambling and see who wants to pick up the baton at this point.
This podcast is an excellent example of why I don't do this in person.
Chris, I just want to ask something, and I'm going to let other people offer their thoughts first as I ponder, but this will help me ponder. Is this just sci-fi clubs, or do, not that you would know, but do you suspect that any sort of fandom club within the sort of geeky...
Well, you know, I put sci-fi clubs and fandom clubs in the same sort of thing. I mean, it could be fantasy, it could be horror. I know that we had an anime club that was on one of the campuses. They had a little run-in because the campus finally said, no, you can't run this unless the students are actually running it for you, because they had an old charter and they kind of just took over the charter, and the people running the club on the campus were no longer, hadn't been students in ages, if they had even gone to that school at that point. And I learned that through, we'll talk about that a little later, about the meetup phenomenon and how that's helped and not helped.
Okay. Well, I'm gonna step back, and I want to hear Brian and Cam's thoughts on this first.
Or you guys can talk about your experiences with being in clubs. What about you, Brian?
I would like to ask you all to recall a female guest. I don't remember if it was Camo or if it was Carol or Coffee. I think it was Carol, and her first convention experience. Anybody remember that?
I believe it was Coffee, yeah.
It was an anime club that had decided to hold a convention, and it was 10 sweaty guys in wife beaters and shorts honkered over a tiny little screen watching pervy anime.
Right.
And, I mean, I'm sure they're not all like that, but that was pretty consistent with my experiences.
Yeah, I do remember that now.
Yes. Still a better ratio than Adult Friend Finder.
Wow, yeah. But you have had experience, and it just turned you right off, Brian.
I'll tell another story. You remember Michael Keaton movie, Johnny Dangerously?
Yes.
Love that movie. You fought against Ice Hole. That was a great movie.
Once.
Yeah.
Oh, my.
So, I'm trying to think if I have had any experience like that at all, and I don't think I have. I'll try to rack my brain to see if I ever attended any sort of clubs that were just like, no.
I don't remember if I dragged you to any of them, but think BCC South Regional 94, 95.
I think I was in the military at that time, or I probably would have been there with you.
It was high schoolish, so maybe the math doesn't work out. Maybe it was 92, 93.
Closest thing I can think is our lunchtime RPG sessions, which were, we knew everybody there, so there was nobody to be creeped out by, really.
But I think you can imagine how inviting that was for people who we didn't know.
Yeah, I imagine anybody happening upon us in one of the science classrooms playing like the Robotech RPG during lunch would have been like, I'm gonna eat somewhere else. Okay, so point taken. Even we who never consider ourselves weird or creepy might have been a little off-putting to people just because of the niche nature of the activity.
Yeah, right, but I think your guys' experience is very similar to mine, which is, you know, it was just a bunch of friends of yours and you guys got together and did stuff. Chris, I think what you're talking about is more of sort of an organized club with like a structure and officers and, you know, that kind of thing, right?
Yeah. Well, to a large degree. And, you know, I guess for me, I got really lucky. We had that sort of thing in college. And I guess, like I said, I got lucky. We actually had close to like a 50-50 ratio because we would do the club and our girlfriends would come along and they were geeks too. And I mean, in fact, at one point, we even had to have, what, every third month, the girls put their foot down and said, we're having potluck because we're going to not talk about games and geek stuff. We're just going to actually be social.
I love your definition of, like, we had 50-50, but they didn't want to be there.
No, they wanted to do something entirely contrary
to what we usually do.
No, but they did want to be there, and they did it for, like, you know, just two meetings in a row. We did our geeky stuff, and then the third one, they'd want to have a little potluck social sort of thing. And then, like I said, I've been part of a club for 10 or 15 years, and it was mostly just couples. Of course, they were I'm the youngest guy in the group, which is kind of sad.
Not doing much to dispel the "but they all knew each other" stereotype.
True.
Yeah, I mean, growing up, I mean, obviously I had my group, and we did our thing, and, you know, I guess you could call us a club or whatever, but we, you know, we didn't have like t-shirts or bylaws or anything like that. You know, we just sort of hung out and did the things that we like to do. But recently, you know, and Chris, you know, you've come to a few of my events. I run a fairly successful meetup for, you know, Doctor Who fandom, Firefly, anything science fiction. It's called, you know, Whovians, Browncoats, and Science Fiction Fans Unite, which then translated to a pretty successful Facebook page. You know, I think Meetup has really done a lot to sort of bolster bringing fandoms together. I mean, and not just, you know, the things that we sort of are into or thinking about, but all, you know, geeks of all natures, you know, sizes, shapes. If you're a geek for yoga, there's tons of yoga meetups you can join. If you're a geek for pugs or, you know, boxers or dogs or cats or whatever, there's tons of meetups you can join. I think Meetup has been a pretty good tool up until recently to bring like-minded people together that can sort of, you know, share those things together. But yeah, so I mean, it may not have that hierarchical structure that we're sort of used to in these, you know, old school science fiction clubs, but there is a group leader, and that group leader sort of puts things together and plans events, and people show up at the events and they have a good time. And I think that's really what the spirit of, you know, all those things are about anyway, right?
I think that's kind of the successful version of it, which I kind of blame the internet, the internet enabled, because it's a lot harder to, like, go up to people. Hey, man, are you into... No, never mind. Hey, excuse me, are you into... Never mind. Than it is to have like a spot where they're kind of browsing already and think like, oh, I'm into that. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think it's been really successful. And the reason why I say up until recently is because, I mean, nowadays you just, you know, Meetup is a pay service, and, you know, I've sort of already made the decision that, you know, when my, I guess, current subscription or membership or whatever comes up for renewal, I'm not going to renew, because there's really nothing you can do that you can do on Meetup that you can't do on Facebook. And Facebook is free. So, you know, I think Meetup is sort of seeing the end of days once people start migrating over, you know, more to Facebook and other social media platforms.
And that functionality of Facebook has only been sort of recently, right? The past couple of years.
Yeah, the past few years it's really gained in popularity, and Facebook itself has seen the popularity, and I think they've sort of focused on, okay, now we've gotten to sort of a critical mass in terms of adding users, but now we can add these groups that our existing users can, you know, get more involved with, and you know, we can gather even more information about them and sell them to even more companies and make even more money, you know. So it's I guess a win-win for everybody, depending on how you look at it.
Yeah, I think Meetup kind of went in cycles. I don't know if it's going to recover from this down cycle, but I remember when Meetup got started, people did a lot of these, oh, cool, we're going to have these meetups, and people would show up in large groups to kind of sort of do something science fiction-y. And then what happened is after a while, people, especially when Meetup was still free, because it wasn't always a pay service, or if it was pay, it was much cheaper. Because, like, what, it's like $25 a month or something now?
I don't think it's that much. They've actually gone to, like, a tier system now where if you have a certain amount of under a certain amount of members, it's less, and if you have over a certain amount of members, it's more. But I think they're doing that to try to hold on, and, you know, but it's, you know, they're over.
Yeah. Well, when it was cheaper, I mean, what I saw was people would basically, they'd meet up at meetups, and then they would kind of branch off and create a new niche meetup that got even, like, more, like, you know, you'd find all the Star, you know, everybody being a big mass, and then the Star Trek and the Star Wars guys would separate. And then in those, they would actually split up into more niche stuff. I knew one meetup that was only for fan-based Star Trek productions. That was it. That was their whole thing, was to show up and just watch Star Trek fan films. I was like, that's pretty niche, guys. And of course, predictably, when you get that niche, after about a year, you've gone through almost anything you can go through, and then they just would die off.
Well, and that's the other thing, too, is a lot of these meetups, they go in cycles as well. Like, you know, you get, you know, they're really active for a while, and then, you know, the leader sort of, or, you know, maybe gets busy with something else or something happens, and then unless someone sort of steps up and takes over, it's gone, you know?
As I'm listening, guys, I'm thinking, have we maybe stumbled upon a reason these clubs have a short half-life? Namely, that they are niche, that they are devoted to consuming or celebrating a very small, what's the word I'm looking for, volume of content, let's say. And that once that's been thoroughly celebrated or represented or you know, paid tribute through fan endeavors, it's run its course.
Well, that, and I think people's just natural short attention span, you know?
I mean, Doctor Who was the worst of it way back when, and it's done just fine now, so I don't think that's safe to say.
Hmm. But they've what? Benefited from a resurgence in TV, no?
Oh, Doctor Who for sure.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Well, I think part of it was back in the day when you had a sci-fi club, and the group I'm in now, they do Robert's Rules of Orders, and I have to grit my teeth through about an hour of meeting before we actually get to what we're going to do for the presentation.
Yeah.
But,
oh, yeah,
yeah,
no chance.
But I think back in the day when you couldn't get that niche, people just kind of learned to, like, be able to, like, live with other fans. And, hey, you know, we talk about everything. You get your turn. I get my turn. That's fine. Now with the ability to go nicheified like that, people just go, I don't want to put up with these guys that aren't into the thing I'm into, to the exact T that I'm at.
You know, I kind of have to ask, like, and I do consider myself, like, a pretty serious fan, but, like, what the hell do you talk about? I mean, I've never really sat down and discussed an episode of Star Wars with anybody, or Star Trek, or Doctor Who, or, like...
Are you asking up in the air, or are you asking me?
No, I'm asking you. You've done it, right?
Like I said, with the sci-fi club, it's not just nichified. We bounce them back, but, you know, we usually have, for my club, what we do is there's somebody does some sort of presentation after we do the business meeting. Like a buddy of mine, Adam, he basically does a media show where he catches us up on all the trailers and stuff. And then after that's done, we have a potluck dinner, and we just talk about maybe what was in the meeting, or just what the cool books we read or the movies we saw. We bounce back and forth between a lot of different subjects. Sometimes we'll get into, like, a small discussion about something in Star Wars we liked or didn't like. But, I mean, you know, as far as, like, saying, oh, we're just going to sit down and talk about Star Wars today, that's not really what we do. It's more, like I said, it's maybe that's why the niche thing kills things off so fast, because you can't have enough conversation to keep going back and forth on. You only get to talk about that one little niche thing, and then That's it.
Well, because I mean, Doctor Who is different. I mean, that it's there's just so much content to talk about, and there's it's so subjective. Like, who's your favorite Doctor? 10? Oh no, who's your favorite? 11? No, I love 6. You could talk. There's so many episodes and so much content. You can talk for years.
And the TV show itself has changed so much over the years. It's become a different genre. You know, right. Like what was it?
It evolved, and yeah.
Exactly. The third Doctor was like much more of a spy show, and the second one was much more of kind of a crazy sort of space tramp thing, guy. You know. Right.
And yep. So I mean, there's a lot to talk about, and I mean, at our Chris, you've been at several of my meetups. I mean, we talked at length. About a ton of stuff at those. Would we be able to do it forever? Probably not. But, I mean, we only get together, once a month, once every few months.
But it's a packed house when we do.
Yeah, no, it's a great time.
So you guys have fun getting together and essentially just talking about what you like, which sounds like kind of the core mission of a lot of these clubs, or a core mission. So what accounts for their decline even as conventions are on the rise, or should there even be any thought to a correlation or a relative rising and falling of cons and clubs? Because to my mind, cons are an open to the public event, broadly touching on a lot of different fandoms. They become these commercial entities far removed from any fan run and based predecessors that they have. It's all about making the buck now and bringing in the guests and appealing to as many people as possible. So, I mean, it's almost no wonder to me that as a lot of casual fans are able to get their buttons pushed at these conventions, they've maybe fall away from these more niche and hardcore gatherings of fans that we see in clubs.
I think that might be part of it, but I mean, most clubs would meet once a month, and conventions are usually at most, what, once every 3 months? Or
sure,
once every 6 months?
Except in Florida.
Yeah, they're
every weekend.
Sure, but if you're like a, Susie Doctor Who fan, 77 or whatever, that's bad, probably more like 93. And you only like the one dreamy doctor and you want to meet him because he's super cute. Like, are you going to go to a club or maybe you would have, but you just have a convention where you can go and like see the actor that you like. And I don't know. I'm trying to come up with an explanation. I'm not really sure.
Part of it is also a lot of these sci-fi clubs back in the day, they focused on what the most activity was going on in science fiction and fantasy and horror at the time, which was not the movies, and it really wasn't TV, it was the books.
I see. So, I'm still not sure we're getting any closer to answering your initial question. I don't know. I've offered a couple explanations. What do you guys think? What's with these? Why are we seeing this decline in the clubs?
I just think with the advent, just the proliferation of the internet, and I'm talking, going back to the 80s, not just in the last few years, but just the proliferation of the internet and so many entertainment options, so many, different things to do and see, and the spreading of, I guess, fandoms and the access to so many different fandoms, coupled with everyone's short attention spans, just like sort of how Brian and I groaned when Chris said, well, we got to sit through an hours of Robert's Rules of Order before we get to what we're actually going to talk about. I mean, good luck getting anyone under like 25 to sit and do anything for an hour, So like, there's just no chance that you're going to get anyone to do that. So, they people want things immediately. They want them for a short amount of time, and they want to be able to access them instantaneously. They don't want, a weekly or monthly, all right, let's show up at, on Thursday, every third Thursday of the month at 8 o'clock and sit down and bang a gavel and have a meeting and, whatever, and eat potluck. They want to sit on their couch and access 5 different things using their tablet, their smartphone, their computer, their TV, and, while eating cheese doodles, by themselves, basically, still being connected to other people. So, if it's not online, it's not going to happen, I don't think. And even the ones online, have this sort of arc of, you know, becoming popular and then people losing interest and then, you know, moving on to something else.
I'll hopefully add to what Cam is saying. All of these things are so popular, people are just DVRing them.
Yeah. Yeah.
People are DVRing science fiction clubs.
Yeah, that's very true.
Yeah, so people are not into by appointment interaction or entertainment. They want everything on their terms when they want it, and tailored specifically to them. Basically.
I mean, I wouldn't even say like people demand that, but it's hard to argue when it's available.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe we've arrived at it. Maybe it's just a change in people's behavior. The low attention span. Give me
what I want when I want it and only for as long as I want it.
Right. Yeah. Everything on my terms. I mean, a club involves a sort of democratic giving and taking. You know, I don't get everything I want, but it's for a common good where we all get something out of it that's better than what we could all get individually. But with the internet and being able to pursue my interests by myself and view these videos by myself and be an opinionated dick on a forum with no consequences, you know, I get everything I want.
Yeah, and it's a, you know, that those type, the clubs of the old days, you know, it was a commitment. It was a commitment, not necessarily even to the fandom. It was a commitment to your fellow clubmates, you know? It was more of the social thing and getting, like, I mean, just think about it in terms of our game nights. It's not that, you know, the love of board games is almost secondary to, you know, us getting together and having a good time. And you see how that waxes and wanes. I mean, you have a core, you know, we have our core group that shows up all the time, but, you know, other people come and go. And it's, I think that's just sort of a microcosm of what we're talking about.
I'll try to bring it home one step more. Why aren't we doing a radio show?
Wait, meaning what exactly, Brian?
Because no one wants to sit down at 8 p.m. on a Wednesday night and listen to a radio show. They want to download a podcast that they can listen to any time of day or night.
Exactly.
When it suits them, while they're doing something else. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Point taken, point taken. And a club, that's the other thing. A club is a, you know, hey, we're meeting on this day at this time. Well, you know what? Maybe on a Wednesday I don't want to. You know, I'll DVR the club session and I'll watch it at my leisure. Impositions on people's time has become intolerable, I think. And, you know, we've all been there. There's something you enjoy doing, but maybe just not at this moment. Well, you make that sacrifice because, you know, this is when it's going down. These days, not so much.
I don't know. I really think it's these days the sacrifice isn't even asked. I mean, I do have fans, and I talk to them about the show, and, I mean, they listen to it. They're a part of it, just not when I am.
Sure, yeah, yeah, yeah. You have fans?
Yeah, I talked to people at a game night that actually, like, listened and said, hey, that thing was smart, and blah, blah, blah. And...
Son of a bitch. How am I going to get some fans?
You got to be Grumpy Cat, man.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm not the Grumpy Cat. What am I, the upbeat jackass host, or what?
No, you are the fearless leader.
Well, I want to be feared or something. I want fans. Like, oh, you're really scary that last episode. We're tuning in to see what kind of outrageous antics you'll get up to next. Yeah. I have zero fans. Nobody ever says they like me on the show. Except like my friends who like have to say that.
They have to. It's their job. Yeah, man. Great show.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I think you guys have hit on it because, yeah, I know. As we just talked about, I grit my teeth when we go through Robert Rules of Order, but I do it because I like hanging out with these guys when we go back and forth talking about sci-fi stuff. And I don't agree with them all the time, but you know what? I like my buddies. I respect them to, you know, in their wheelhouse, and we have a good time. So that's why I keep going back when I can.
Maybe, like, I'm the problem in a small way, because I don't think I would enjoy hanging out with anyone who insisted on minutes and business and gavel. That gavel would wind up used inappropriately pretty quickly.
No, we never had a gavel. We never had a gavel, and actually for us, we've pretty much kind of, this sci-fi club I'm talking about has pretty much decided to tell it to admit that we really aren't a club like we used to be anymore, and a lot of that stuff is going to the wayside. And we are eventually, it seems like we're just going to evolve into, you know, 6 or 8 highly organized friends who get to hang out once a month.
That's still a club.
Yeah. Old habits die hard, what can I say? But, you know, I think to some degree, I mean, you know, with people are missing out. I mean, you get to go to a con and it's kind of cool. But, you know, once you're gone, the con is kind of gone. You might have made a friend or two, but with a club, you've got several friends that you meet once a month on a regular basis. I guess for some people, they like it.
Cons wrong, man. I think you're doing cons wrong.
Well, for one, I don't have the pocketbook for those cons.
That changes things.
It does.
You might also be doing clubs wrong. I think for a club to work these days, like, you have to have a clubhouse that's come and go as you please. And if we should happen to run into each other at the clubhouse, cool. But if not, also cool. It's all about just, you know, whatever suits me at a given moment. That's the basic mentality nowadays, I guess.
Well, maybe I'm not the only problem.
Honestly, am I wrong though, Brian? I mean, is that not the vibe you get about anybody meeting in a clubhouse? Or
there's a lot of that, but I mean, I live by like the 10% rule. I mean, anything you can do, I think you're gonna have to do 10 times as much as you get. So, you know, I think like a lot of people kind of not taking advantage, but not necessarily giving back to the club, doesn't mean the club's failing, because you can do pretty well with a 10% core.
This is true. Right, this is true.
You just have to have that 10% core that is happy. They're getting something out of it that doesn't require reciprocity from the run-of-the-mill membership, right?
Like Cam said, some of our game nights, what, 30 people show up?
Yeah.
What's our core? 4 people?
That's a great
four
point.
4 to 6.
Yeah.
And sometimes that core changes after a while. It gets to be maybe to 6, and then it goes down to 4, but it's a different 4, but everybody keeps going on. You know, I thought there's one other big difference between a sci-fi club and a convention, and that I don't think people really want to show up at a sci-fi club at somebody's house in awesome cosplay get-ups.
Well, yeah, that's for cons, right? Pretty much.
Yeah, exactly. That's a pure con thing. That's not a sci-fi club thing. But, you know, those cosplayers bring a whole other set of people that want to see them.
Oh, you know what, Chris? We've just arrived at it. If you want to bring back clubs, or if you want a way to make a club really healthy, make
cosplay.
Yeah, make it cosplay, or make some kind of activity such as fielding a team at a convention where there's a competition, where basically your club's activities revolve around making some kind of a showing at conventions as a unified body or as a team or what have you, or as a brand.
There you go. Well, you know, I'm surprised people don't have cosplay clubs where they get together and they just talk about, well, this is what I did for my pattern. This is how I make styrofoam and cardboard look like awesome metal armor.
You've met like 2 or 3 cosplayers, haven't you?
In the flesh? I mean, you know, on the podcast, yeah, but I haven't got a chance to really hang out with somebody who is a tried and true cosplayer. They're not social creatures when they're not out there on the floor?
I wouldn't say that so much as, and Brian, don't let me paint them unfairly, because there are certainly exceptions to this, but there's a lot of just like catty bitches of both genders in that scene, as far as I can tell.
Aw, how disappointing.
They like to be seen, let's just say. I mean,
yeah.
Not in any negative way, like, fine, you know. But, yeah, they're seen.
Exactly.
I believe the word you're looking for is closer to diva.
Yeah, that works too. Anyway, I think we may have arrived at a sort of cultural shift as the ultimate explanation for why clubs are having a hard time, specifically sci-fi clubs and fandom clubs, are having a hard time thriving as they once did, even in what seems like a more fertile geek culture in general.
So what do you think the future is going to be like?
Online.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. All online. Virtual reality. Like, if I'm not at the club, my avatar will be there to hang out with you. So, yeah.
It'll be Twitch and Google Hangout.
Yep.
How long until we see the first online con?
We already have, actually. I'll send you a link to it. There is an online con.
What's it called? OnCon?
Jeez. Give me a second, guys.
What's it called? Hypertext Con?
Yeah.
Chris, send that link post-show. We believe you. In the meantime, I say once again that VR is going to show up to save yet one more aspect of the culture.
Augmented reality, man. Woo-hoo.
Meet without meeting.
Oculus Rift.
Yeah, man. Yours for only $1,500 is the latest I heard, so.
Yeah.
A little pricey. I'm not saying I won't get one necessarily, but that seems like kind of a deal killer for the broader market. We can discuss that another time.
Yeah.
So
all they have to do is figure out how to subsidize it with a cable plan.
Oh, there you go. If they can get somehow, right, if they can get a provider to let you finance it essentially by getting locked into a contract, we're in there. Anyway, what do you guys think? Pretty much ready to wrap this one up? I think we've kind of discussed the topic and come up with some reasons and solutions and even gave a brief view of the future.
I'm good.
Second.
Yeah, second.
So it's supposed to motion. Yeah, that's right.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Okay, the motion is carried. This meeting of the Nerd Extravaganza Sci-Fi Club. By the way, did you like Battle Beyond the Stars? I thought that was a good reference at the beginning of the show.
It was awesome.
Absolutely.
That was a spaceship with the boobs, if anybody doesn't remember. So, all right. With all that said, guys, I guess we can see to getting the heck out of here. And I'll kick us off down that road by saying that our listeners should check us out on iTunes and Stitcher. Give us favorable reviews, maximum stars, what have you. We would really appreciate that.
Like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter and Instagram, add us to your Google circle, and join our own club, the Nerdstravaganza HQ Facebook group.
Check out our website, nerdstravaganza.com, where you can find this and all of our back episodes. Also check out Nerdstravaganza on YouTube, where you can see all of our videos, board game reviews, movie reviews, and other video content. And shoot us an email at nerdstravaganza@gmail.com.
Okay, with all that new and old business out of the way, Chairman Chris, I do believe this meeting has reached its end.
Well then, ladies and gentlemen, meeting is adjourned.